Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everyone. I am Glenn the Geek from Louisville, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 13th, 2011, episode 222, sponsored today by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, horse world.
Do you know what today is?
No, what?
Yeah, hey, to tell me. It's Tuesday.
I can't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
Beautiful day, yeah, yeah. Beautiful day. And beautiful day, yeah, yeah. Beautiful day.
Well, Jennifer, first of all, good morning to you. I want to talk to you for a second, being the other resident equine rider in the group, and I would love to hear from our listeners, too. And, of course, you guys can always give us a call at 347-637-3238. But I've got to ask you, Jen, have you ever had a bipolar horse?
Oh, yeah, I have. Have you gone down that road, honey?
Oh my gosh, I just don't get it. So I've got this competition coming up this weekend. That's this weekend. Oh my God. So it's this weekend up in Flagstaff. And so I've been trying to get my horse ready, but I don't have an arena. I really don't have everything that I should have to prep a horse for his second horse trial ever. When I say horse trial, he's doing all three phases, dressage, show jump, cross country, and then show jumping. So it's definitely going to be a big challenge. So I rode him 2 days ago, and he was so bad, Jen. I mean, so bad. Was ducking, trying to run back to the barn. That's how bad he was. Like, you know, you make that circle and you make that circle that might actually lean kind of towards the direction of the barn, and he would pop out his outside shoulder and just try to go back.
So he's not making circles anymore. He's making potatoes now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then I rode him yesterday. I'm like, I am going to figure this out. So I got a whip. I got my little spur suaders, threw those suckers on, and I go out there. And I didn't even use anything. He was perfect. Just absolutely perfect.
Now, is he one of those horses that gives you warning signs? Like the one I had, usually she didn't tell you which personality. And she pretty much had three of them. She didn't tell you which personality she was going to have that day until you were in the saddle.
Mm-hmm.
Is he like that too?
I think that's how they like to do it, because this horse, literally in the cross ties, will fall asleep. I mean, as I'm grooming him, he leans into the currying. He's like stretches his neck out. He loves being scratched, and then, you know, he'll drop down and just like hang out. The lip will get droopy, and he just falls asleep while I'm putting the tack on him. And then it's like he just wakes up right when you get on the saddle. So I don't know what kind.
I have an idea.
The last competition, too, he was asleep in the stall when I was tacking him up, and then he was a fire-breathing dragon.
Try this.
What's your idea?
Try this. Try this at home first. Closed course. Professional driver. Take a curry comb with you and scratch his neck in his favorite spot while you're riding him.
That's actually a really good idea. However, I am not qualified to brush and ride at the same time.
That's a tough one when you have those guys that are multiple personalities like that, because with mine, it took me all of 5 years to figure out and get to the bottom of the issue with her. And when I finally got it figured out, it made sense. There was no fixing it, but at least it made sense. I understood it.
How did it make sense to you? Inform me so I can figure it out.
What we discovered with this particular horse is, for lack of a better description, she had arrested development. Her behavior patterns, when we really broke it down and really kept track of what was going on, were exactly the same as the behavior patterns you would associate with a foal between the ages of 4 and 9 months when it came to interacting with her surroundings and other horses. So what would happen with her is, as long as she was happy and content and wonderful, everything was great. But if she got a little bit freaked out, you know how foals are and youngsters are, if mommy leaves the stall, they freak out and, like, climb the walls and stuff their legs through the bars and completely lose track of reality and their own safety. Well, that was her.
Yeah.
And she continued to do this throughout her life. So as long as she felt her geographic location and her company were both awesome and wonderful, she was fine. But
here's the frustrating
kicker. She was actually better at horse shows than at home because she had no chance to decide where safety was.
Uh-huh.
Like, okay, this place is all new. I don't know who's appropriate and where I should be. So she was fine. But if you had a 4-day-long competition, by day 4, don't even get on her back. Just don't go there.
Well, throughout the competition, because it was 4 days last time, he actually got better every day.
That's
good. I'm just talking about just regular, simple riding at home. I mean, Jennifer, I couldn't get the horse to trot a circle 2 days ago. And yesterday, he's like doing walk to canter transitions on a perfectly circle, around 20-meter circle. And then, you know, halt and then go left and then go right. I mean, he was just an angel. So I really think
the first
date.
Was that the first time when he was bad? Was that the first time you had ridden him at the new place?
Yeah, it was. And so I do want to give him a little bit of credit for that. No, it was the second time, but the other time was just a hack. But I really think that they're smart enough, Jennifer, to understand that they are, and Glenn, you could probably vouch for this because you've seen your wife deal with this. It's like they know they're on the verge of getting their ass sold.
And they do one of two things.
You know,
they either go lame or they get better.
Yeah, that's right. And some of them are actually happy about it and want to be sold. So, you know, it goes both ways.
It's like I have pushed her as far as I can push her. I better be good one day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Start a new one now.
Yeah, I really think it's like golf. It's like everybody hates playing golf, and then you get suckered in because you hit that one perfect drive that just gets right off the club. Perfect thud, heads, you know, 250 yards, it goes straight, and then you spend the rest of your experience golfing trying to get that same exact shot. That's how it is with horses, I think, because you get that one great ride, and then you spend 6 weeks trying to get another great ride.
Yeah, they set you up.
They do tease you
because you'll get almost a good one. And then it'll be just 80% there, and you'll go, well, tomorrow it's going to be 100% there, and then it's back to 10% the next day. But they tease you. Right when you're about to give up, they tease you. That's what they do. And that's, by the way, true of driving horses, too. One day, that little pony put me in the ditch, and the next day he was as good as could be. But then the following day, I was back in the ditch. So, you know, it's just...
Is there an acceptable ratio of complete whirling dervish to fantastic athlete? Like, is 60-40 acceptable, but 70-30 is not?
I think that depends on the person.
Yeah, exactly. I'm working on just give me something. Just give me something.
10% would be good.
Now, if I remember right, did Jet not have kind of a not-so-great dress rehearsal for the last show? Didn't his last lesson, wasn't that a little dicey, or was he good right before his last show?
No, he was good. He, I mean, he,
yeah, he was good, but we were shipping out a lot and going to see my coach and riding a lot, and we haven't done that at all. So I'm reckoning it like this, okay? Here's what I'm thinking. The last horse trial, I mean, granted, we finished in eighth, and we finished it. He was a fabulous on cross country, but he was crazy in the dressage and the show jumping. So I'm thinking this. I prepared so much for the last horse trial. I mean, lessons every week. I was jumping, you know, getting on a great schedule. I was perfectly, he was fit. He was happy. Everything was great. And he was a demon at the horse show. So I'm taking the opposite approach where he's unfit. We haven't practiced at all. We have done no preparation whatsoever. Like, I'm going to pull his mane at the show. And then I'm thinking, well, this might be a great way to try. Might as well go the other way.
You're just going to surprise him with it. He doesn't see it coming.
Nope, not at all. So I posted on Facebook, has anybody ever had a bipolar horse? Demon trying to run back to the barn one day, then perfect angel the next. And definitely got some people that agree with me. And Cheryl Figure says that her mare can switch personality every few minutes. So that's impressive.
All right. Well, Jennifer, what's coming up on the show today?
Besides bipolar disorder, today is all about, on Pfizer Tuesday, is all about record setting. First, Templeton Thompson will stop by with some great news about her fan-funded upcoming CD, Icy Blue Heart. And next, Steve Maxwell of Campus Equestrian will be browbeaten into making some predictions about who he thinks will be setting records in the upcoming collegiate show season. And then to round out the morning, Jack Brothers of Hidden Brook Farm will clear up some of the mystery regarding the annual record-setting spend fest known as the Keeneland Yearling Sales.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. All right, my Daily Winnie today goes out to, as soon as I can find it, it's gone. There it is, goes out to Sammy Joe. Sammy Joe is the zebra guru. We've had her on the show a number of times. Well, she posted on her Facebook page, and it just cracked me up. And Jennifer, can you post the picture on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning, too? And Sammy Joe wrote, I took Wilson, the water buffalo, for a walk. He loves to go for walks. I don't have to put a halter on him. No matter where we go, he stays close and has a better recall than most dogs. He was disappointed, however, to find that his pond was all dried up, so no swimming this time. And there's a picture of Sammy Joe taking Wilson, the water buffalo, for a walk. And let me tell you something. Sammy Joe, I think she's like 5'9 or somewhere in that range. The water buffalo is almost taller than she is. This is one big beast. So post that picture on Facebook. It is a chuckle. So my hat goes off to anybody who can take a water buffalo for a walk. By the way, you could put a halter on him. If he wanted to leave town, you ain't stopping him. He's going. So I don't know, halter or not, it's probably better without a halter. But you see that picture, Jamie?
This picture is amazing because, again, water buffaloes are known to be, A, aggressive, and B, huge, and C, very strong. So at any point, this chick is crazy. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Sammy Joe, you're absolutely crazy, and I wish I was as awesomely crazy as you.
Now, look at the horns on that baby. If he just tucked his head down, you'd be skewered.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this is pretty impressive. So she's just taking her water buffalo for a walk. Why not?
Yeah, everybody has a water buffalo.
All right, well, my Daily Winnie, one of them, I've got two. One is that Tom Rittenhouse, who posted this on her Facebook page, and it's almost unbelievable. Sunday, which was September 11th, at Belmont Park, Thoroughbred Racing, the first race winner was number 9, the second race winner was number 1, and the third race winner was number 1. So it went, if you were to bet the I forget what it's called when you just bet the winner in each race. You would have to pick 9-1-1, 9-11 on September 11th. So Tom pointed that out. He said he can't make that stuff up. It actually happened, and I just find that a little bit spooky. But somebody made some money on that. That's good. Amazing.
Well, that's good. By the way, do I sound okay to you, Jamie? We're having sound issues this morning.
You sound fine to me, Glenn. Definitely
okay.
Sound okay to me. So, but I do have another daily Winnie.
Okay. Maybe.
You're just a mess over there. I swear. You can't get it
together.
And
one of those mornings. 4 days to vacation, and it feels like it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're about to check out. So let's just get through today. My next daily video goes to Robert Dunn. He said he posted something on my page, and I actually can't look at it because I haven't updated my Adobe Acrobat or whatever you're supposed to have constant updates of to be able to watch other people's cool videos. But he said that he had the joy of working with Anthony Fedorov on the production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And he said, this song comes from the heart, and it's for me and Chad. And so I've got to be able to hear it. So Glenn downloaded it, and we're going to play it out at today's show. Glenn, am I going to cry?
Yeah, you're probably going to cry, but let me tell you, this Anthony guy can sing. He is terrific.
Wow.
So I think you're going to like the song, too. It's very heartfelt, and to give you an idea, the title of the song is What Freedom Costs. So, yeah, have your tissues ready.
Oh, so it's like a patriotic theme? Yeah, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, you're going to cry. The foreword says, What Freedom Costs was written for and is dedicated to all of our servicemen and women around the world who risk their lives every day so we can save, so we can live our lives freely. So does that give you an idea?
I'm actually welling up right now listening to you read that. So thanks, Robert. That's very sweet, and I definitely have to play it at the end of the show.
Michelle Snipes just posted on Facebook to Sammy Joe's picture of her walking the water buffalo. She said, interestingly cool. That about describes it, doesn't it? Interestingly cool.
Yeah, that's about as far as you're going to get, really. how do you – I don't know what to say about that because it just doesn't even seem like it would be – okay, to do that.
Well, Jennifer, can you try and give Templeton a call? We'll see if we can get her on the phone here. Do you have her number, Jennifer?
Nope.
You don't? Okay. I will. I'll make sure you get it, and then you can give her a ring here. Do that right now. So Jamie can talk about something.
I don't think you need me to talk
about myself. I'm amazed
myself
how many
here.
People have bipolar horses, Jamie.
it's not shocking to me because you know what I got to say that my warm blood is not bipolar at all. I haven't really experienced this before, but when you talk about your horse being, I've always heard people say my horse was really good yesterday and he's so bad today, blah blah blah. So I knew that my time would come. I finally own one, but. Inez says that she has a bipolar cat. Her horses are sane. And Jamie Rose says that, yes, I have had that. Maybe it's a Jamie thing because it's another Jamie. But then I've got to ask you, Jennifer. Pat Gilmore Lee said, is bipolar any easier to handle than outright nuts? Jen, how long did it take Tigger to listen to me? So this must be one of your former students.
That's my mother.
Oh, no kidding.
And to answer your question, it's the latter.
Oh, where she says, how long did it take to get Tigger to listen to me, or was it just my lack of conviction that I was the boss?
Yeah,
it was
that
one.
So
it was just your mom?
Yeah, it was just she just takes a while to decide whether or not she was going to be the boss. Yeah,
gotcha.
It was a little tough transition. My mom is 5'1¾" and weighs about 98 pounds soaking wet. And her pony of many, many years was about 13, 13.2, appropriate size for somebody that tiny. Well, then she goes and buys this quarter horse that wears a size 81 blanket. You can imagine.
Huge.
Yeah,
huge.
She was a monster. And a little bit silly. She just had a little silly in her. Very, very looky at everything. So it took a little bit of time for 5 foot one, 3¾ to really develop the kahunas to say, okay, woman, you weigh 1,200 pounds and I weigh 98. Tough noogies, I'm in charge. And then they were famous friends after that.
Gotcha, once you figured it out. Now, Glenn, are you there? Are you with us still?
I'm here. Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just listening
Jennifer,
to you guys talk about horses.
Jennifer talking about her mother reminds me of something that I don't
Uh-oh.
Think I told you.
Uh-oh. What's your mom do now?
No. You know what my mom's doing in like 2 days? She's coming to Arizona. She's coming to visit me.
Oh, so you're getting a visit from mom at the new place.
Okay, this may not be that big a deal to you, but I have lived here for 4 years, and she has not come to visit me since I moved here. So this
oh,
is
I didn't
a big
realize that. It's your
yeah.
dad that had come out before. Ah,
right,
gotcha.
And you know what's really, really exciting about this whole thing, and Chad is absolutely thrilled, Chad being my husband, it's that my mom, let me look at the calendar here. My mom.
She's staying longer than the 3 days.
Oh, yeah, she's staying a week. I told her she had to stay a week. We're going to go to Flagstaff. She's going to go to the horse show with me. We'll give him plenty of time. But here's what's really exciting is my mother leaves on the 22nd, and my father gets here on the 23rd. It's just amazing how that worked out, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad they're not both there together. That would be
would definitely be exciting.
those bedrooms are not far enough apart.
No, they're next door. That would be really bad. That would just be I don't even
but
want to think about that. And I
for
haven't.
Everybody that her mom and her dad are not together. So that's we should clarify
yes.
that.
I think that was pretty crystal clear. but what's really exciting is that they're coming both so close together, and my poor husband.
We can take off and get to hang out with them too.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'm excited. I'm thrilled that both my parents are coming. But if Chad's mother was to come for a week, and then Chad's father was to come the next day and stay for several days, it would definitely be challenging. I'd be
funny
really
how
mad
that works,
at him.
Isn't it?
I know.
Funny how that works. You know, sometimes, though, occasionally it works the other way, where the spouse actually likes the in-laws better than their own parents. That occasionally works out that way.
Well, I must say that we both have great parents, and I really appreciate his parents, and he doesn't mind mine at all either. They're easy to get along with, and they'll sit down and have a beer with you at the end of the day. So it's certainly not a stressful situation, but it's just, you know, people in your house, and I'm thoroughly excited. I don't know if he is or not. I haven't really asked him. I didn't really give him that option.
That's right. That's the best way. That's what Jennifer does to me.
And I bet we could ask our guest how all of this is, too, because we have Templeton Thompson on the phone. Tempe, do you love your in-laws more than you love your own parents, or absolutely not?
I love everybody. Just like crazy.
Good answer,
I love everybody like crazy. Yep.
You had to know Templeton Thompson would come up with that answer, without a doubt. I should have known better.
He loves everybody.
I love
because
everybody.
They're coming
baby.
Over tomorrow or something. There's something going on there.
I'm blessed to have them.
I was going to say the in-laws. They're standing right behind you, aren't they?
No, not at all. Not at all. You guys are so funny. Y'all crack me up.
So tell us, Tempe, we heard there's some good news in the horizon.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I know y'all hear me say this all the time, but I mean it, and I know y'all know that I mean it. I am so blessed. Amy and I are so blessed. We not only reached our goal of $5,000, but we got to $7,480 on our Kickstarter project for the ICB Heart album. So I'm just, like, over the moon excited, and I can't believe it, and I'm so grateful. Oh, my God, I'm grateful. Everybody rock. for pre-ordering and pledging. I'm so honored. And Glenn, again, I know you got the ball rolling there, cowboy, so I'm just so grateful for that.
Well, when
and,
we talked to you last, when we talked to you last about 12 days ago, you had about 48 backers, and you had just gone over the 5,000 goal. You now have 101, so even after you went over the goal, people piled on.
I know. I can't believe it. I'm so grateful. I really can't. Sammy and I have just been, like, doing the, you know, where you, like, bump your fist and you do the pow, like, we'll just walk around and go, oh, my God. We can't believe it, you know, and it's just unbelievable. So we're really happy, and we have so much work to do, and that's such a cool thing because it's, like, this enables us to, you know, to do the work that we need to do to get this project done and out to everybody who pre-ordered it. And I'm really excited. I'm just amazed. I'm truly amazed. I get, it blows me away. The support blows me away. So,
Templeton, so have you written these songs? Are you about to go record these songs, or is this just kickstarting the whole new process?
Well, but, you know, they're all cover songs. So these songs all exist. And we have several of them already recorded, you know, because part of that was from the show that we did a few months ago that inspired the whole deal. So we're using, you know, some of the recordings from that show, and then we'll be recording, you know, we have a few more, obviously, yes, to record, and then there's mixing and all that stuff that goes into, you know, you guys know, the whole process and getting it ready, and there's artwork to do for the album, and there's a whole lot to do, and it's so lovely to be in a position to now just kind of exhale, you know, and go, okay, you know, we can really, really hunker down now and put our heads down and get this done. Yeah,
that's great.
So I'm so excited.
I'm thrilled for you, because this, to be, has any musician ever been in the situation, unless, you know, you're like super A-lister, in the position to be actually in the black making an album and not in the red trying to recoup money?
Right. Yeah, exactly. This is a first for us. It's a first. And it feels really good. It feels so good. And it's, you know, and it's because of all the kind, beautiful people out there who support us. So it's like, we couldn't do what we do without the support. And so that, you know, it just hits me really hard in a good way, you know, just to be so supported and for people to, I guess, like what we do, which that means a lot, you know, because I think Glenn, I know for sure we've talked about this, and maybe Jamie, we have before too, but, you know, when I made my first record, that was the first one I'd ever put out into the universe. And, you know, I thought, well, okay, they may just be coasters for people and basically family, because that's probably who all maybe wants them, you know. And so now to be, this is like album number 7, to be doing this, you know, and doing what we absolutely love for a living, because as y'all know, we were doing that before when we wrote songs professionally and were paid to write songs, but stepping out to make a living as an artist was scary, and it's working, and it continues to work, and I'm just feel really blessed. So,
well, that's the result of a little bit of talent too, Tempe.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, you and I could record albums all day long, and nobody's going to listen. So there is a little bit of talent in there too. And I do want to ask you now, there were incentives that you offered for the backers here who donated money. Now, the incentives, are some of those going to be sent out soon? How does that work?
Yes, what I did, it's so cool. This Kickstarter thing is so cool. You can make up your own frequently asked questions, and I have that information on my page. And the page will stay up, because this is also, as you know, how I get to communicate with my backers. They make it so easy. I'll be sending an update out here later on, and actually, what I'm going to do is send an update out today, too, I'll be collecting everyone's email addresses, mailing addresses. I'm going to start finding out, you know, if you pledged for a reward that includes the exclusively designed T-shirt for this project, you know, what size T-shirt you'd like. So in answer to your question, the first thing that actually I'm going to be able to send out is that unreleased original song of ours. And I just even sent an, you probably received this update from me that said, well, my plan was to even try to get that out actually today, the day after, you know, the fundraiser ended, but we've been running like crazy people on the road. We just got back last night, so I'm going to take a few extra days to get that absolutely finished. So that'll be the first thing that you and everybody gets, because even if someone pledged a dollar, which, as y'all know, I kept saying, every amount just matters, and it just is so appreciated. So that original song will be coming to everyone in a few days. And then what I'm doing is I'm waiting until all the funds, obviously, get into our account and all that good stuff. And that will be right around the week of October 3rd. And what I'll do for rewards, for example, that include some of our previously released albums, all the other things, you know, I'll go ahead and send those out. You know, so I'm kind of going to try to do this in stages, so everyone's getting something, you know, kind of along the way of the journey, with the Icy Blue Heart album, and ultimately the last thing everyone will get will be the actual signed hard copy of the Icy Blue Heart album.
And you had said that you were hoping to have that released before Christmas, right?
That's the plan, you know, and I'm even on my FAQ section of the Kickstarter page, you know, I'm basically saying and letting everyone know, because bless everyone's hearts, I know everyone knows the creative process can take longer than you think sometimes, but we'll still be working on it, I know for sure, through October. But, you know,
Jamie and I have been doing this show for almost a year, Tempe, and we're still trying to do the creative process.
Yeah, I know. You know, so you just never know. But my goal, exactly, I know. Well, it never ends. That's the beautiful thing about being creative, right? You know, doing in however way you are, it never ends. You just get to keep doing it and learning, and it's so cool. But in answer to your question, I'm hoping November. I would love to be sending these out. You know, it would be great if I could get them out even before Thanksgiving. So, you know, that's the goal. But like I also say in the updates that I send out to all the backers, I will be so good about staying in touch and letting everyone know, you know, where we're sitting, so people aren't going, geez, I wonder what's going on. I won't do that. You know, I'll make sure to stay up on everything and let you know what's happening and all that good stuff. But I'm just as excited to get it out as hopefully everyone's excited to get it in their hands. And, you know, then comes the, I hope everyone thinks our baby's pretty. That's what we always say. I hope the baby's ugly. You know, so I hope everyone's happy with it.
I've never heard an album be.
We always say that. If we play a new song out and, you know, we get a good response, we're like, oh my God, yay, y'all don't think our baby's ugly.
That's fantastic. Well, TempestandThompson.com. I think it's an amazing undertaking to put an album out and get it distributed in about 2 months. So I would do wish you the best of luck with that. And I know it's going to be a challenge, but good job. Round of applause. Way to go, Temple.
Oh, yay, Timmy.
Thank you. You guys are too cool. And I love y'all. And I appreciate the support. And just honored by your friendship, and it means a lot. You know me, I'll just keep going, but thank you. You guys rock. You're rock stars, and have an awesome day. It's a beautiful day. We're blessed to be here, right?
You too,
thank
girl.
You,
okay, hugs. Bye, y'all. Bye.
Well, there is your coffee for the morning. You said you ran out of coffee, Jamie? You just got it right there.
Well, you know, I didn't need any more sunshine in Phoenix, but I have plenty to spare now, just in case. She just brings sunshine with you wherever she goes. She's awesome.
That's right. All right. Well, why don't we talk about our sponsor for this half hour, and then we have our guest coming up next, Steve Maxwell, with the Collegiate Report, because guess what? School has started.
Oh, boy. School is back in session. Just to tell you, today's sponsor is Pfizer Animal Health, and they're passionate about the health and wellness of horses and all animals. Their expanded equine portfolio includes their trusted Strongid C2X, West Nile Innovator, the Innovator family of vaccines, Solitude IGR, and Zylexis. Pfizer strives to make life better for horses and for the people who care for them. Protect your horse against upper respiratory disease, such as equine influenza virus, equine herpesvirus, strands 1 and 4, and from the Fort Dodge vaccine line, Pfizer Animal Health offers FluVac Innovator, adjuvanted with Metastim technology for an improved immune response. For more information on Pfizer Animal Health's products, visit PfizerAnimalHealth.com. That's P-F-I-Z-E-R, AnimalHealth.com. And by the way, it is getting close to fall vaccine time. And you can ask your vet four Pfizer vaccines. You don't have to just go with what they have. You can ask them, tell them that's what you want, and they can provide that for you if they're willing. So, and if they don't already. So anyway, ask what kind of vaccines you're getting. You don't have to just get whatever. Might as well go with somebody who's trusted. That's my two cents. That's off script.
There you go. Terrific. Well, thank you, Jamie. And I think that's the first time in 6 months that either one of us has read that ad with no mistakes at all. Ashley got through it with not one word messed up. Very
well,
good.
I thought I screwed up. Sorry.
Good job. All right. Well, our next guest is Steve Maxwell from CampusEquestrian.com. Steve is going to be coming on with us here about once a month to keep us up to date on what's going on in the intercollegiate world. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of college students right now who are also part of a horse program at college, and that's what we're talking about here. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Jamie.
Well, I'm glad I actually got to meet you in person, too, back at 8 a little bit ago.
Yes, you did indeed.
You were over there running around and keeping an eye on things.
I was. Go ahead.
No, you
go ahead, please. By all means.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, a lot of people don't, if you haven't been exposed to the intercollegiate world, you don't realize what a competitive nature that has. It is just like any of the other sports in college. These guys and girls are competitive to the max.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And it's amazing how large it is. And I think a lot of people don't realize that the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association, which has been around for 44 years, coming on 45 years, there are over 8,600 riders registered, at least last season, to compete within the IHSA from coast to coast, including a few in Canada. So that's just enormous. And that's excluding the varsity, which I know you're very interested in. The NCAA, it was basically not truly NCAA recognized until they get to 40 schools, but they there are 12 teams that compete for a collegiate championship in the varsity, and that's roughly 20 to 30 riders per team right there as well, not to mention another organization, the Intercollegiate Dressage Association, which is made up of over 600 riders. So, yes, college riding, many, many people involved.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a little bit tougher, too, to remind everybody. It's a little bit tougher. I mean, these kids learn how to ride well because they're not just taking, you know, it's not like a typical horse show where you're bringing your horse along and you get to use your own horses. They're using the other school's horses, and they do that just for economic sake. It's a lot cheaper to use the other school's horses. So you're riding new horses in these competitions that you don't have very much time with, do you?
No, not at all. Also, in many cases, it isn't necessarily economic. It's a decision that came about to level the playing field when the rules were set for these organizations way back when. For example, the IHSA, the concept was that this way, let's say somebody is an A-circuit rider, and there have been people on the A-circuit who've ridden in the IHSA. This way, they don't necessarily get to ride a cream-of-the-crop horse. They have to ride something totally unfamiliar, and people who are catch riders, for example, will often fare better because they're used to hopping on whatever. And in fact, the young lady who won the Cashion Cup at IHSA Nationals last year, that's the honor given to the top open rider in the country, she grew up on a farm where her mother would bring horses in, sell them, bring other horses in, sell them. She was on different horses constantly throughout her upbringing, and that definitely helped her throughout her IHSA career because she just graduated.
Well, that would help you if you have that experience in the past, because so many don't. So many grow up just riding the one horse and then, you know, get to college, and then all of a sudden are thrown on different horses, and that's kind of a startling thing sometimes.
And it either works out very well, usually, or it doesn't work out well. It doesn't usually fall in between. There have been some very good A-circuit riders who joined the IHSA and gone on to win the Cashion Cup or do extremely well and get to nationals. And there are others who try it for a matter of weeks and sour on it and decide it's not for them. There's no other way to look at it.
Well, remind everybody who the top schools were last year, and then I'm going to ask you to give your official prediction for this year.
I'll give you a couple predictions, although you have to keep in mind nobody's has had a single show yet. I mean, the first shows for both for anybody are pretty much.
That doesn't stop any of us from predicting anything. We, you know,
but
that doesn't stop.
I'm going to go ahead and make some statements about
predictions. Oh, good, okay.
Last year for the IHSA, Centenary College, they won their second national championship in 3 years. They did lose some important people, including the Cassion rider, Marissa Cohen, who I was just speaking about. But they have a lot of depth. They have one very good open rider who has never lost a flat class in a year of IHSA competition. That's remarkable. And I suspect Centenary, many people will pick them like I am going to say right now, but nobody's had any shows yet. Usually during the season, I go to college shows every weekend, and I'll tell you, you get a feel for certain teams that are on an upswing. You can just sense something. 2 years ago in 2009, when Centenary was on their way to their national championship that year, you could feel that team was different from the last few Centenary teams. So you can get that feeling sometimes from traveling around the country. I'll go ahead and pick them at the moment, but I'll tell you, I really think a lot of Skidmore, who won it 2 years ago, if you're going to ask me for a few others, I think the winner down south between Savannah College of Art and Design and College of Charleston, two very good teams, not to mention the University of Central Florida team that's good down south in that region with them. Whoever comes out of that region will be very good in the postseason. I really think St. Lawrence, even though they lost a couple of good seniors, they could be good. I also like Miami of Ohio. This is all Hunter's seat as a dark horse. Virginia Intermont, Mount Holyoke, they're all good. I really like for the Western. Here's a scoop for you on the Western. Last year, Berry College was a big surprise winner in the IHSA Western. People did not see that coming. They thought Findlay and Ohio State, the perennial top two, would continue their trend. Now, Findlay got hit by some graduation losses, but they had a big, big offseason pickup because Blackhawk College is a two-year school. They had the best open Western rider, a young lady named Becca Irish. She had a great sophomore year, was the individual Western national champion at IHSA Nationals. After her 2 years are up at Blackhawk, and they're done, she's now going to go to Findlay. They had their tryouts yesterday. She made the team, as many would obviously think she would. Findlay basically just picked up the best open rider that was out there. So I really feel Findlay is going to come up. And I think Ohio State's going to have another good year. And I think it's between those two, again, for the Western title within the IHSA. Over on the NCAA side, a little bit different. Last year, the overall champion was Auburn University. They had the best Hunter seat team, and they had a top three Western team. I really like their Hunter seat team to be, again, a contender for the top spot. They have a rider, Maggie McAlary, who almost didn't go to college. She didn't need to. She's so good in the real world of riding. And because of the scholarship offer, she went to Auburn and has done rather well down there, although she did get DQ'd at one show for something. But she, with her talent and with Auburn's depth, they're pretty good. I really like Georgia. I really like South Carolina. I really like Oklahoma State over there. I also want to go on the record for the Western, Texas A&M. They were the national champion. They're very, very good. I also kind of like Kansas State for the Western. I like Georgia for the Western, and I like Oklahoma State for the Western. So I'm going to go out and throw those names out at you, which are really no-brainers if you look at last year's final results. Most of those teams were in the top seven, either English or Western. So I should
mention that. I know that Texas A&M, talk about graduation, they lost, because we've talked to a couple of them actually, they had lost a couple of seniors this year that were very good riders. So they're going to be rebuilding a little bit too. Are there scholarships? Are these teams able to offer scholarships?
Within the varsity NCAA emerging, a lot of those teams do give out scholarships, many of them. I think most of the riders that you see riding on a regular basis were given scholarships. Within the IHSA, there are some schools that do indeed give scholarships, equestrian-related. So it can indeed happen. I'm sure within the IHSA, because the vast majority of teams are club teams, there are far fewer scholarships percentage-wise. Some of the top teams give out a large number. So overall, there are quite a few people in the IHSA who did get scholarships. So, yes, it's not it's not nearly as common as it might be in other sports, but there are indeed quite a few who do receive scholarships.
All right. Well, for girls coming up through high school right now, if you hadn't thought about riding in college, it might be something to consider if you're a half-decent rider. You know,
you
have a shot at a scholarship as easy as anybody else. So it's something to really take a look at if you had not considered it before.
Yes, absolutely. There are a number of scenarios where one can prepare for college as far as trying to be recognized for your riding talents. There's a website, BeckettRunRiding.com, Beckett with two T's. A fellow named Jim Aragon has what's called these equestrian talent searches. They're held over a long weekend, usually about five times a year in different parts of the country, where people learn from various coaches and clinicians exactly what college coaches are looking for. That people can go to those from the time they're in sixth, seventh grade through the senior year and learn quite a bit. It's good preparation. There's also usually an event in Florida every year in the middle of the year where people try to be recognized by both IHSA and NCAA coaches. So absolutely. And there are scholarships out there, most definitely.
Oops, I went to your website.
Okay,
and that's
good.
Where the whistle came from.
Yes, I do.
Hear
I have
me.
Bells and whistles right on the homepage. People say, well, where are the bells and whistles? Right there on the left-hand side.
I jumped out of my chair here when I turned that on. So that's campusequestrian.com. You can find more information there. And we'll look forward to talking to you in about a month after the season gets started. And we actually have some things to report from this year.
I will indeed. I also didn't get a chance today to talk about both the Intercollegiate Dressage Association and what I'm really excited about, the Interscholastic Equestrian Association. There are almost 5,000 riders. They're less than 9 years old, and they are a high school, really they go all the way down to sixth grade, middle school and high school organization that is growing just faster than any horse organization out there right now. And I really want to go into depth on them at some point.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much, Steve, and we'll be talking to you again in about a month. It's campusequestrian.com.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Jamie.
Well, Steve will be back again next month. And, you know, boy, we are having sound issues here. I think Jamie was trying to chime in there and could not get through. So while we're dealing with trying to get her back on the line, why don't we do our song for the day?
Can you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Now we can hear you. Were you trying to talk? I thought, wow, she's being awful quiet.
I thought, well, why is he being such a jerk and ignoring me?
We didn't hear you at all. So I thought, wow, she's letting me do an interview uninterrupted. It's my special day. But
no,
really
I was trying to interrupt. I was definitely trying to interrupt.
All right, let's play a little Templeton Thompson here. We have her song. We haven't heard this in a long time. It's called Must Have Been a Cowboy. And we're going to be right back with your guest, Jack Brothers of Hidden Brook Farm here in Kentucky, talking about the Kentucky sales and how all of that works. The million-dollar horses, or at least they hope.
I'm a young woman, but I've got an old soul. You can see it when you look in my eyes. I've always had a notion that I was born too late. I felt that way since I was just a child. Must have been a drifter, 'cause I still love to roam. Must have been a dreamer, 'cause the dream still isn't gone. And I still get this feeling time to time that I must have been a cowboy in another life. At night I dream of horses, feel the thunder of the herd, and the coolness of a frontier summer night. And it ain't just imagination, like these memories are real, catching up to me in some forgotten time. Must have been a drifter, 'cause I still love to roam. Must have been a dreamer,
And that was Templeton Thompson, Must Have Been a Cowboy. And you can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings. I got to figure out how to do that again so she can't talk. That was kind of fun. and I also have Coach Jen here as well. We are Horse Radio Network show highlight for today is the Western Radio Show, episode number 71. Just came out by Succeed. And we're speaking with the world champion, Cleve Wells. Cleve won 21 World and Reserve Championships and 26 Congress Championships in the Western Pleasure classes. So they talked to him. He was had an interesting story. He had one of the most popular stallions and also some stallions that had some great names like Zips Chocolate Chip. How could you not like that? Radical Rodder, Chips Hot Chocolate, and Hot Rod and Zippo. I love the Western world. They have such great names. We also find out how he recently broke his leg, and it wasn't involving horses. Something to do with, I'm not going to tell you. It's on the Western Radio Show, episode number 71. You can find it at horseradionetwork.com. Well, Jamie,
Glenn,
are you back
listen,
now?
We give you one job. We give you one freaking job to do, and that is when the song is over, you're supposed to come out of the song and say, hey, this is Glenn the Geek along with Jamie Jennings, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by Pfizer Animal Health. Jennifer reminded you of that 5 seconds before the song was over, and you start talking and it was gone, wasn't it? What happened there? What was the process?
ADD. Just ADD is sometimes a curse, but you know what? One thing about people with ADD is we're never bored because we're always on to the next thing. So we're never bored. We don't have time to get bored because our mind never allows us the chance to get bored. When people say they're bored, I go, how does that happen? You know, I kind of wonder about that because I just never have the opportunity.
Health. Pfizer Animal Health.
And we
every
like
day,
Pfizer Animal
every
Health.
Day.
But you see, I also know that if I screw up, you're there to correct me. That's not a problem either because it happens every time. So I also know I can rely on that. That's a crutch I have.
Yeah, I got to say that's not true because you found a way to mute me through the last guest. So I'm not always there to help you out. We have to grow and learn. And again, like you told Templeton, it's been almost a year since we've been doing this show. And every day we play a song. And every day after the song, you have to say the sponsor's name. That's the way that they do it. And every single time you forget. it's impressive, really. It's like it just doesn't, there's not that chip inside your head that says, do this.
No, that's true. I never got that chip. That's missing. And if you could order me one, that would be great because then I wouldn't get yelled at by you anymore.
Yeah.
And my wife.
I don't know where to get that. Hey, on a side note, did you know, and are you going to go to this, on September 14th at the University of Kentucky, Jerry and Ann Moss, which are the owners of Zenyatta, are going to speak at the University of Kentucky Equine Initiative Distinguished Industry Lecture Series. It's going to be at 6 p.m. in the College of Ag's Say Auditorium. You have to go to that.
Where was this?
This is
at,
actually at UK. Jerry and Ann Moss, Zenyatta's owners, are going to speak at this big, long-worded function. The University of Kentucky Equine Initiative Distinguished Industry Lecture Series. Or just go to Kentucky and meet Zenyatta's owners.
So this is Friday night, this Friday?
September 14th. Is that this weekend?
That's actually tomorrow.
Tomorrow, there you go. I got your plans for tomorrow night.
You
need to go to this. And you need to meet them and you need to tell them. Yeah, you need to tell them how much I love Zenyatta and that they need to come on our show. I think it's only fair.
You know, if only I had that song ready, but I don't.
There's a reason I didn't tell you. There's a reason I didn't tell you about this story before.
Yeah, there was nothing about Zenyatta in the show notes because you know I would have that song ready. So this is for not telling me. That's for not telling me that you.
Okay, sorry.
Catch me off guard like that. I also want to do a programming note here. We will not be doing really bad ads this week because Jamie's going to be at a show on Friday, so she's going to be talking to us from the show, and it's kind of hard to do all that when she's holding her phone in the truck. And then also, next week there won't be any really bad ads because we're off all week. We have some great shows recorded for you for next week, so we have some new shows for you that you'll be able to listen to, but we won't be doing really bad ads for the next 2 weeks. People are going to go through withdrawal. I don't know what they're going to do on Friday.
I'm going to go through. You know how many horses I'm going to have to look at now because I'm going to spend 2 weeks of trying to collect really bad ads and then feeling sorry for horses and then going shopping. I'm going to have to, and you're not going to be here to stop me.
Well, fortunately, I know your parents are coming, so we got 2 weeks there that you probably won't have a chance to go looking for horses. So we're safe.
Oh, please. Like, my mother is not a worse bleeding heart than I am. Oh, my God. You should save it. You should save it. Need some help. Uh-huh, yeah. I'll have four by the time we get back.
All right, so let's. I have my pick for the things you'll never own this week. And, Jamie, if there's a link down there that you can, and Jennifer can post this on Facebook then, too. But there's a link there for B-Bar-K Ranch. B-Bar-K Ranch. This is in Evergreen, Colorado. It's 45 minutes west of downtown Denver in the Rocky Mountains. Oh, my God. Every time I check out one of these things I'll never own, it just makes me wish that the $5 a week I spend on the lottery would actually win me something. Because this place is unbelievable. It's 996 acres in the Rocky Mountains. Half of it is hay, meadows, and pasture, and the balance is pine, fir, and aspen trees. Now, get this, Jamie, and I'm sure yours is a lot like this, your new farm. A magnificent, I can't even say the word, a stone residence of just over 16,000 square feet has 9 bedrooms, 12 bathrooms, a 23-seat theater, 16-person hot tub, exercise room, library, and many other features, but that's just one of the primary structures. It has a world-class barn and arena that totals, get this, the barn and arena totals 45,000 square feet under one roof. Total amenities include 19 stalls with individual heating, electric watering, individual runs, and fortunately for you and me, they have just reduced the price from $13.9 million to $11.8 million. So it's affordable now. We can
Glenn, you describing that is almost exactly like my new farm. I mean, I was like, it was like you were reading the place, you know, the sales pitch on my place. It's just like that, except not at all like that.
Did you see in the indoor arena, you know how you have box seats. You have the special boxes for the rich people at sporting events. Well, they have one of those special boxes, glass enclosed, heated, air conditioned, with comfy seats that you can watch the people in the indoor in if you are a VIP. But you have to be a VIP to be able to get in there, I'm sure. You probably have to pay. But the house is incredible. It really does have a 23-seat theater. It's just incredible house. Anyway, that was my Things You'll Never Own. And Jennifer, if you could go ahead and post that link to that property, the B Bar K Ranch, and you can buy it through Manson & Morse Ranch Company. I guess all they sell is ranches. And it's in Colorado. So 11.8, it's a cheap, people.
Gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Put that link up there. Well, I believe we have our next guest on the line, and his name is Jack Brothers, and he is from Hidden Brook Farm in Kentucky. And just to give you a little background, Jack is a racehorse owner, I think he's a breeder. I know he's a consigner. Jack, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Jamie.
And where are you calling us from, Jack?
I'm actually on the sales grounds at Keeneland right now. You know, the sale begins at 11, so, you know, we're kind of still filtering through our horses, working on a short list for the next session. So, you know, we're vetting horses, rechecking, and just, you know, the usual marching that we do before a sale.
Well, see, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about today, because the usual stuff that goes on at a sale, the rest of the world has no idea what those things are.
Right.
So you have Hidden Brook Farm, which is 600 acres in Bourbon County. It's right next to a place called Claiborne Farms. Maybe you've heard of
Correct.
That. And just so you know, you guys have sold some pretty big names. And I'm sure that most of our listeners have heard of a horse named Big Brown, who came through your barn. And I'm sure you were sad to part with him.
Right. We bought him as a two-year-old in training, and we bought him for Paul Pompa, you know, who we've had a lot of success for. And, you know, naturally he's, you know, our biggest success story, you know, on the buying side. You know, we've raised some very good horses. You know, Discreet Cat came through our program. Discreetly Mine was born and raised on the farm. Lady of the Desert, who was a champion in Europe last year. Came through our program. So we've had, you know, on the raising side and on the buying and selling side, we've had some horses turn out very well.
Well, it sounds like it. And I believe you said when we talked on the phone yesterday, you were, how many horses do you have consigned at Keeneland right now?
We had a couple scratched, so we'll end up selling about seven. Well, we'll put about 70 through the ring. And today is our first you know, first selling session. So beginning today, we start to sell every other day. So we sell today, and then we'll sell again on Thursday and Saturday, and then continue on that pattern, you know, to the end of the sale. So
wow.
We have a, you know, we have a nice farm. We have a, you know, a Bernardini filly, a Dynaform filly, a Street Cry filly, more than ready. We have a couple of nice big round colts that would be really well represented, and we're good. We're good across the board. We have a strong consignment, and I think we'll get off to a running start today.
Well, tell everybody a little bit about what a consigner does, because you've got some, you know, you've got the sellers, you've got the buyers, you've got the owners, and then in the mix there you have consigners. So tell us what Hidden Brook does as a consigner.
Well, you know, it all begins at the farm. You know, we consider Hidden Brook a nursery, so a lot of horses are born and raised there. You know, some are, you know, raised for racing, and others are commercial breeders that aim for these yearling sales. So that's kind of, you know, the mode we're in, where, you know, we're a nursery, so we do the consigning for our customers as well. So we try to be full service in that respect. But basically what we do is, you know, we want to raise them, you know, from day one, and then what we do is we'll begin to, we start to prep them, you know, a few months out from the sale, make sure they come, you know, nice and fit looking with a great coat. They're all trimmed up and, you know, as you would prep for any other, you know, sale. So, you know, we want to have them looking their best. And, you know, before they come to the sale, we vet them, x-ray, we do endoscopic exams, make sure their breathing is normal. And we just go from there. We have all that information is in a repository here on the sale grounds that veterinarians have access to. And they'll also use independent vets to scope horses that they're interested in. And, you know, from there on the consigning side, it's fairly routine. You know, we show from 8 in the morning until 5 every day. And, you know, on a typical day, you know, with a consignment our size, you know, we have 15 selling the first two, you know, first two sessions for us, you know, we'll have 350, 400 shows a day. And
when
you
say shows, do you mean like bringing a particular yearling out and showing them for somebody who says, I want to see that one?
Right. Well, typically what they do is they come to the barn. They fill out. We have a card at the barn that has a roster of Colts and Phillies selling by session. So they just check off the ones they want to see. And, you know, we show them in succession and then, you know, move on to the next, you know, potential buyer. And then the other thing we do is we track, you know, who looks at a horse a second time, a third time, fourth time. It starts to give us an idea where we need to be on the reserve for a horse. So it's always it's a little bit of a chess game trying to figure out prices and where we want to be with reserves. And, you know, you have a lot of factors, you know, go into the mix. You know, how many hits the horse has had in the repository. We know if a vet pulls out the x-rays that they're looking, we know how many times the horse has been scoped. So you try to get a feel for, you know, where you need to be price-wise. You know, naturally, you want to maximize value the best you can for your client. And, you know, that's where it all a little bit of finesse comes into play, trying to handicap, you know, what the horse's value. But it's a process, and it's a repeated process that just takes place over. It's kind of the same, a little bit of the Groundhog Day approach. It's just the same thing every day to different horses.
So, okay, say that I was at the Keeneland sales, and I am me, and I'm just some random person that walks up and goes, hello, Mr. Brothers, my name is Jamie Jennings, and I would like to see hip number 87, number 42. Would you just bring all those out just for me, even though I'm like, I clearly cannot afford one of these horses? Or do you
after
have
he's
to, like,
done laughing, maybe. After he's done
right.
laughing, he might, yeah.
No, that's a good question, but basically, you know, we don't do credit profiles for, you know, people who come to mind, and you never know who the next new buyer is. So there are a lot of familiar faces, yet here you have there's an international representation at the sale, so there might be faces you don't know. So, you know, we treat everybody the same way. You know, when they show up at the barn and want to see our horses, and you never know where the next big player might be coming from. So, you know, you could walk up to the barn, you could get an all show, you know, see every horse in the barn, and we're happy to do it, and then we just move on to the next buyer.
Interesting. So I technically could just get all dressed up in something fancy, head down there and be like, yes, I'd like to see the Bernardini Colt, please.
Exactly. Yep. No, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We, again, we just, it's, you know, it's open to the public, and, you know, again, you don't know who your next buyer is. So, and they come from all walks of life, from all over the globe for this sale.
Interesting. So when a horse is sold, so you've got the horse, it goes into the ring. Are you, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but are you or does anybody you know actually bid on the horse as well while it's in the sales ring?
You mean the owner of the horse?
Yeah.
Typically, we discourage the owners from bidding on their own horses because, you know, and sometimes I have to put my consumer hat on as a buyer. You know, it might discourage me from making more bids if I'm bidding against the owner. So really what you can do, there's a lot of checks and balances in place at a sale. You could set a reserve. You don't have to sell any of the horses, and you have to protect their value. So once you do an appraisal of your horse, you kind of figure out where you need to be on price. What we do from there is we just put a reserve in with the auction stand, and essentially if we think a horse is worth $100,000, you don't want to put a reserve in right to $100,000. As a rule of thumb, we do it about 60 or 75%. So we usually, you know, with our experience, we're pretty adept at getting that price and establishing a value. So what we'll do is we'll set a reserve for 60 or 70 and then let the market take it up to the 100 or and beyond, hopefully. We sold a big brown in July for $125,000. We had a $60,000 reserve. We figured he'd bring 100, he brought a little bit more, which was good.
So,
you know, it's a little bit of a chess game, but, you know, it comes with, you know, just figuring out the amount of action you have for any given horse.
So for the horse end of it, it's this yearling, and they probably are starting to understand their job pretty good at this point. So they come out. What is a day in the life of the horse at the sale?
Well, you know, most of them, you're in and out of the stalls, you know, again, from 8 in the morning till 5. It can be a little bit taxing on them physically. You know, they're walking on hard ground. And, you know, they're not turned out the way that you should. You're in the stalls. But, you know, they're set up in stalls with fans. They're bedded down nicely. You know, but the in and out, it kind of gets to them after a while. They get a little bit they could get a little bit grouchy by the end of the day. And it does take its toll to some extent. It's a little bit of, it's the first time they're away from the farm for most of them. They have to exert themselves. And one of the things we do when we prep horses is we have an equalizer, you know, in the barn, and they'll spend some time, you know, getting fit for the sale, even though they're just walking. But, you know, again, a horse will show, you know, any one horse could show 50, 60, 70 times in a day. So, you know, the back, you know, buyer's making them walk the ring two or three times, back and forth, twice, back and forth again. You know, then it might go right on to the next show without going back to the stall. So it's fairly nonstop once you get on the sale grounds, when you get closer to the auction.
And probably lots of vetting, lots of people poking and prodding. And I guess, too, they do a lot of scoping, which is, you know,
right,
going down and checking their breathing pipes for those who have never had to have a horse scoped. It's not a pleasant, relaxing experience for the horse.
No, I mean, you know, it is, again, it's the first time for a lot of them being away from the farm. And horses, you know, as herd animals, they get used to a certain routine. They miss their buddies at the farm, and, you know, it's a little bit of a shock for them when they first get there. But, you know, typically they settle in fairly quick. And, you know, they are well prepped for it, so they're fit enough to take care of it. And, you know, and truthfully, some of them like being out. Some of them enjoy it more than others. But you can see some, you know, yesterday we were looking at, you know, right up to the bitter end at 5 o'clock, and you can see them starting to get a little bit grouchy. And, you know, you don't blame them. They start to drag a little bit. And a lot of times we'll look at a horse, you know, late in the day. We'll make sure we look at it in the morning when he's a little bit on the fresher side. Because they could, you know, just like us, they get tired at the end of the day when they're exerting themselves the way they are.
Oh, poor little babies.
Right.
So I can't believe I just said that to you. You're like, whatever. So I got to ask, we've seen some pretty good prices come out of this sale. Obviously, the first day was a 1.4. I think there was a 1.2 yesterday and a couple other big ones. How are you feeling about the sale and the economy and the whole racehorse industry at this point with this sale?
You know, I've always said as a breed, we're a resilient industry. You know, and you continue to see that. Horse people are, you know, fairly hardy overall. It's always a good sign. I mean, the first book and the first days of book two, a bit of a tough barometer, because I don't think, you know, the people that buy those seven figure horses, you know, have a tendency to be recession proof. Once you get down into the middle of the market and those bread and butter horses, you know, the blue collar guys, that might be where you see a little bit more of a dip. But usually, you know, my experience with the yearling sales at the very top end, they're, you know, fairly recession proof. They're not as impacted as the economy the way the rest of us are. So I think as we get further into sale, we'll start to see, you know, a little bit more of an adjustment, start to understand exactly where the market is. But, you know, I think we're fairly resilient, you know, overall. And, again, like, stud fees have been adjusted the last couple of years, so the sellers have a little bit more room to make money and keep them vibrant.
And, you know, Jamie, Jack will be able to answer that a little bit later in the day. You'll know whether he's in a really good mood or not.
That's right.
Jack, Jennifer and I always get to ask the really hard questions. Jennifer and I are huge Food Network fans. Has Bobby Flay looked at any of your horses yet?
Actually, I'm typically not at my barn, and because I'm looking at other horses. So there's a good chance he's been by the barn. He's here on the grounds. I actually, I'm on the Breeders' Cup board, and I'm on the Enhanced Experience Committee, and he chairs that board. So I spent a little time with him yesterday about the Breeders' Cup for this year and for next year. And he's, as you know, a very creative guy, very forward thinker, and he's a pleasure to work with. And he's fun to be around. He's just, you know, he loves the game and very passionate. And I think he's going to help Breeders' Cup do a lot of good things over the next few years.
Well, you know, I think that having celebrities like that involved in racing certainly does not hurt. You know, that's got to help the sport, a sport that needs some help right now in that way.
In a lot of ways. He's a great ambassador for the sport. You know, he had a Breeders' Cup win last year with More Than Real. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he invests serious money, so we all like to see him win. And, you know, I think he has a real passion for the sport and for the animals.
Now, I got to ask you, Jack, because, you know, this has been a very business-like conversation, but Jack and I are friends, and we go back several years, and I have had dinner at your house, and you're an amazing cook. So have you given Bobby Flay any cooking tips?
I like to think Bobby Flay couldn't warm me up. but one of these days I might have them over for some gumbo or one of my other Italian specialties. But my friends have wanted me to throw down the gauntlet and have a little Iron Chef thing right here in Lexington.
I'm ready. I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
The guy.
Yeah, we're watching.
Others can make some food. I'm not kidding you. And he'll also make vegetarian varieties for those of
That's
us.
Right. Right. That's right. Good. We have nice. We have a brand new fresh pasta store in Lexington that I've been taking advantage of. We've probably put on 20 pounds since they opened. So, but I'm walking it off here at the sale.
Well, Jack, thank you so much for being on the show. It wasn't that painful, so you're going to have to come back again, and maybe we'll get a post-sales recap from you or a preview for the next one. Sound okay?
I'm glad to do that. It's my pleasure, Jamie.
All right, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Bye now.
Have you been to Hidden Brook Farm before?
Oh, my God, I have. I did get to go on a tour of it, and it is one of the most beautiful places on the planet. It is just the epitome of a Kentucky farm, except in the way that it's not ostentatious, and there's no, like, ridiculous gothic, you know, designs or anything. It is just, like you said, a nursery. And you drive there, and you pull up in the driveway, and it's this long, windy driveway, and it goes up this hill, and there's a little hidden brook, which is why it's called that. And it's just, you just get on that property, and you just feel good. You know what I mean? Like, it just relaxes you. I was only there about an hour, but it's a beautiful place, and I really hope that, I wish them the best of luck. They've had some amazing consignments that they've had through there. And again, when you walk in and you go to Hidden Brook Farms and you see a sign, you know, of a list of all the horses that have lived there and you see the name Big Brown, I mean, it's just impressive. It just really is.
Cool. Very good. So it's not quite as ostentatious as B Bar K Ranch in Colorado?
No, not quite like that. It's more of a working man's ranch, where B Bar K is the VIP viewing area of above the covered arena. No, they don't have that there.
Hey, speaking of working places, there's a new place here in Kentucky that's going to be doing some work towards the end of the year, and that's the All Tech Indoor Arena at the Kentucky Horse Park, and that's for the All Tech National Horse Show. And, of course, the National Horse Show has been held for 100 and some thousand years here in usually up in the Northeast someplace near New York. But this year, for the first time, it's going to be in Kentucky at the Kentucky Horse Park. It's the 128th edition, and they announced that tickets are now on sale. They range from $10 to $30, and you can buy them at Ticketmaster.com. Children under 12 are admitted free of charge when accompanied by a paying adult. Limit 2 children's tickets for every paid adult. So you can bring your kids. I like that. The cool part about this is 50% of the net proceeds from the general admission gate receipts will be donated to various charities that are featured each day at the All Tech National Horse Show. So a lot goes to charity, and they'll be announced in the days ahead. Doors for each session open 30 minutes ahead, and all seats are general admission, and parking is free. So this is a really good opportunity from November 2nd to the 6th. If you're in the southern part, you've probably never gotten to see the National Horse Show, which is a really big deal here in the United States. You can now get to see it just by coming over to Lexington one of those days. We're hoping that we're working with them right now to maybe have some giveaways here in upcoming in the next month. And also, we're working with them on getting over there to actually do a couple of shows from there. So we're hoping to get that done during the National Horse Show as well. So that's what's going on with the All Tech National Horse Show coming up. It's one I've never been to.
Are you going to go?
Yeah, we're going to go. We're talking about to them if we can get the internet working. We'll actually do the morning show live there one morning, and Chris will be recording the jumping radio show there as well. So we're hoping to have a booth there and be able to do it right from the National Horse Show, which we're kind of excited about.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, that'll be great. And don't forget to go and listen to Jerry and Ann Moss, Zenyatta Donors, speak tomorrow at Lexington, Kentucky. And
should we hold
up
a big sign that says, Jamie loves you?
They'd probably be like, security.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, though, Glenn, I need you to go ahead and take your Ritalin or whatever it is that you people with ADD take, because I know you have vacation next week and you're tweaking out. You're on the verge of having a mental breakdown. So you got to calm down. We'll get through these next couple shows. You can do it. I have faith in you. Three more to go. Two down, three to go.
Three more days of vacation.
Do
you realize this is the first real vacation we've taken since we started the Horse Radio Network 3 years ago?
I think
so.
That's just a shame.
Yeah, that's why we're excited, actually, about it, because it's been a while. And, you know, I have to work with you every day, so I need a vacation.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I need one, too. I can't wait for you to leave.
All right, let's wrap it up for today. We have a song to play, What Freedom Brings. And this was recommended by our friend Robert, who said that you would really like this. It was really written for you and Chad. And it's actually What Freedom Costs, rather, is the name of the song. So we're going to play the show out with that today. Don't forget, you can listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And you can find our Facebook page where we posted all the links that we've talked about today. And I did want to remind everybody also that if you are a listener to a lot of the different shows on the Horse Radio Network, we have one iTunes feed that you'll find at horseradionetwork.com on the left-hand side that actually will bring all the different shows into your iTunes with one feed. So you can just click one place, subscribe through there, and have all the different shows from the Horse Radio Network on your iTunes. All right, Jamie, this is called Freedom Cost. Do you have your tissues handy?
I do. I've got them right here. So everybody, please have a great day and spay, neuter, and geld.
See you, peelers, everybody.
You don't even know me, nor how I feel. Yet you'll fight for my free will. And even though we're strangers, you have to know how much I'm grateful for your brave soul. You always answer when there's a hero's calling. Here is to your courage, your sacrifice. Defending our freedom, our way of life. Here's to your family, husbands, wives, sons and daughters, and sleepless nights. Here's to remembering those we lost. We must remember freedom calls. What freedom calls. There's so much suffering around the world. The innocent die, the devil's work. And out of these ashes we rise again. Your strength unites as one we stand. You always answer when there's an angel's calling. So here is to your courage, your sacrifice, defending our freedom, our way of life. Here is to your
Thank you for everything you do.